as well?
No, we have the handout.
No, we're just saying you.
Okay. All right. Okay, well, let me start here. First of all, thanks for the opportunity to come speak to you all about our organization, Western States and Tribal Nations. My intent was to drive out and speak to your county commission meeting, Lincoln County, and Sweetwater County commission meeting, but obviously, events have changed, and I appreciate you guys accommodating me and let me talk a little bit about our organization. Western States and Tribal Nations was formed really to focus on the concept of West Coast energy trade and exports from the Rockies to the Asian nations. Going to our slide on the Western States Rural Natural Gas Initiatives, we were born out of a conversation that began between the Utah Governor's Office of Energy Development, the Ute Indian Tribe based out of eastern Utah, and the Colorado Energy Office under then Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper, understanding they had common issues regarding stranded energy, stranded natural gas, they felt it was important to develop a common approach towards advocating for their industries and finding markets for their natural gas. This organization, I'll get to you a bit on our membership and our makeup. But I've been working at the kind of the nexus of energy policy and politics for about 20 years at this point. And this is the first coalition that is state government led, tribal government led, it's a very unique organization in that, and I think provides some opportunities on engagement and support that regular oil and gas trade associations are unable to do. So we established a report that identified and looked at global market opportunities, first for the Piceance and Uinta natural gas basins, and then we've expanded the report to include the Green River basins and San Juan basins with the entrance of the governor of Wyoming, the state of Wyoming, the state of New Mexico to our organization.
Andrew,
the report really, yes, sir.
It's Mike. So we initially had you and the slide. Now we've only got you. I don't know if that's your end or my end, but I don't have your slide. I'm sorry?
See what I can do here. Oh, there we go. I'll see if we can share my slide deck now.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's better. Now they know what page you're on.
Okay.
All right.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yep.
So the report really made the technical economic case. We have the resources. We have the infrastructure. But I think we all understand that these are really kind of political issues. The establishment of the development of LNG terminals to export Rockies gas from the west coast of North America really is a policy, a political challenge as much as a technical, a resource challenge. So the report, a quick picture of our of the report. I'll shoot it to you all after. After this call, the report establishes the Western States and Tribal Nations. Current signers, we have an MOU between us, the state of Utah, as represented by the Utah Governor's Office of Energy Development, the Ute Indian Tribe. We are talking to other tribal organizations, Navajo, Crow Tribes, MHA Tribe out of North Dakota, joining us. The state of Wyoming, as represented by the Wyoming Pipeline Authority. Western Colorado counties of Garfield, Mesa, Moffitt, and Rio Blanco. Unfortunately, the state, when Governor Polis came into office, the state of Colorado decided to leave the MOU because of its focus on natural gas. But the Western Colorado counties of Garfield, Mesa, Moffitt, and Rio Blanco said, raised their hand and said, if our state is not going to represent us, then we want to be a part of the MOU. So they signed, and then the state of Baja, California, Mexico, and I'll get to you a little bit on the importance of that as being a prospective LNG development area. And then the state of New Mexico, under the Lujan Grisham administration. So that makes us, she is a Democratic governor, and that makes us both bipartisan and multinational at this point. So the report really focuses on the social license to operate, of our mission, the importance of educating policymakers and public officials and the broader public on the gas resource base and what it means, both at a regional and national level, but also a global level. Advocacy, communications. We have a crack communications team, and I'll get to you a little bit about some of our work. But we are placing articles and shaping public opinion down from the local level all the way to, we're actually talking with the Wall Street Journal about getting an article on our efforts currently. And then collaboration, laying out a platform where county governments, tribal governments, state governments can collaborate, engage, and really provide them a portal to engage in and influence the issues on West Coast energy exports. And I'll get you a little bit about where we've flexed our muscle and moved the needle. First of all, let's start on, why North American Rockies gas. I think maybe a lot of this is second nature to you all, I think it's worth saying, that the Rockies, states, the basins have, estimates of up to 440 trillion cubic feet. We have extensive and underutilized natural gas pipeline and processing capacity. And, I think this is important in terms of how Asian nations are looking at our markets, and resources. We have reduced geopolitical risk. We have a comparative advantage in that we will not require use of the Panama Canal, which in a number of meetings and presentations from the Chinese, Japanese, and Koreans, they view as a political risk as well as a shipping bottleneck. A few of the bullet points here, $280,000 per transit, increasing congestion. They're already setting limits on vessel size that are growing beyond the canal's new limit. And then the advantage of just being able to ship from the West Coast, North America, is a fraction of what it would require from other areas, from Coos Bay, Oregon to Tokyo, Coos Bay being home of Jordan Cove. We're only looking at 9 days, and that's a significant cost savings. And I've got our staff are actually putting numbers together to outline in sum the comparative advantage of West Coast LNG transit versus its competitors. Just a quick slide here on why our focus, as I'm sure you all are watching, the LNG trade in the world is exploding as countries are looking to displace coal with cleaner burning natural gas. And the Asian market is set to be the key growth region for LNG. By 2040, we're looking at almost 75-80% of the total LNG market. China itself right now is going to be bigger, is currently, I think, already bigger than the entire continent of Europe. So really the opportunities of growth to supply markets is in Asia. quick slide on U.S. economic benefits. I don't have to. I'm sure this is second nature to you all. But you know, we're looking at considerable job creation impacts on our GDP of up to 92 billion per year, up to 3.26 trillion in cumulative benefits over the next 30 years. And I left this slide in. I gave it, and I'll talk to you a little bit about this. I gave a presentation to a number of Mexico stakeholders, including the Mexico Ministry of Foreign Affairs, to show how this would impact them as well. Understanding, you know, California, Oregon, state of Washington, state of California, Oregon are going to be considerable challenges to establishing LNG export capacity. We're really looking at the Mexico market, the state of the west coast of Mexico, and the state of Baja California, Mexico, and you know, they have capacity to become a major export hub for us. And I'll get to a little bit about where those routes would come from. But they're very much interested, and you know, they have a number of promising export facilities. A little bit on also, and we'll get to this in a little bit in more detail. But you know, looking at the overall benefits in reducing CO2 emissions, you know, U.S. West Coast LNG displacement of Asian coal will result up to 60% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions. And that's an important part of our policy platform that we're developing, a report we're going to be issuing in the months ahead, that if you believe climate change is a significant issue impacting mankind, the U.S. West Coast LNG displacement of Asian coal is the quickest way to reduce emissions. Asian gas displacement of coal would result in up to 60% emissions reduction, according to a study from the University of Calgary that we're going to be expanding on. And I'll get you a little bit more on our next steps and where we're going, and you know, where we're going to be directing resources. So so we released our report. We had a formal MOU signing with the counties, with the states of Utah, state of Wyoming joined us. That is Brian Hassler, director of the Wyoming Pipeline Authority, on the far right of this slide. And really, we formalized the agreement. This was all at the Utah Governor's Office of Energy Development's Energy Development Summit in Salt Lake City last May. You know, we all put pen to paper and decided this is where we were going to go as a coalition. And we jumped right into an important project for the Western United States, and that is the Pembina Jordan Cove project, which is really the only project that is looking being permitted on the U.S. West Coast. As you can see from this map, they will be taking gas from Canada as well as the Rockies Basin. The key to the project is developing this Pacific Connector pipeline, which is a 220-mile pipeline that will connect at the Malin Hub and go up to Coos Bay, Oregon. And it is the project's Achilles heel. This is the challenge on getting the project to commercial status is development of this pipeline. So right as we were signing our MOU in May, June of last year, Jordan Cove was going through its FERC draft EIS, and we, working with the team at Pembina and Jordan Cove, helped them considerably in this process. These are some of the other permitting processes that we've been working on with Pembina: the Department of State Lands Removal Fill Permit, the DEQ Air Permit, Water Permit, Coastal Zone Management Review. Really, in the FERC effort, we brought a delegation from Wyoming, Utah, Colorado up to Oregon. We got considerable communications and media coverage eight unique articles within the state of Oregon, including Oregon Public Radio. And then we drove in a significant amount of letters into the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission with elected officials, the governor of Wyoming, county commissioners. Probably a number of you all got contacted by our staff to send in letters, trade associations, chambers of commerce, et cetera. I think importantly, as we're dealing with the state of Oregon, we had significant tribal letters from the Navajo Nation, from the Ute tribal nation, as well as labor groups. So a balanced approach, maybe even bordering on left to center. And we took a delegation up there. Here's our group at the Pembina headquarters in Medford, Oregon, where they were. We all went to the FERC public hearing, provided a counter narrative to the protesters that were out there, and brought a broad delegation to support. Show the importance of Jordan Cove to rural communities in the West, as well as tribal nations and our overall economic development. So the Western states, the report had a number of other recommendations in terms of broadening our membership. Understanding that the counties of southwestern Wyoming are not going to be able to address these issues by themselves, nor the counties of western Colorado, nor even one state by itself, but a broader coalition organized to address specifically the policy and political issues regarding West Coast LNG exports is the best approach, is the most powerful approach. So we have been reaching out to other states on joining our organization, as I mentioned, state of Baja, California, Mexico, where I'll talk a little bit here about the Costa Azul project, the state of New Mexico. I gave a presentation to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Mexico. We have had discussions with North Dakota. We have a number of other discussions kind of underway, including the state of Montana, in the province of Alberta. Again, here's a picture of us signing the MOU. This is where we became a multinational group with the state of Baja, California, Mexico. And here is the state of New Mexico joining our MOU in November of 2019. And so at this gathering, we were actually had this meeting in San Diego, California, where we are hosted by Sempra LNG, and we're given a tour of their project in Baja, California, Mexico, Energia Costa Azul. Here's just to give you guys a snapshot of the basins and what is currently supplying gas to Southern California, Kern River gas transmission, drawing from the western basins. I'm not advocating for one specific project, but this is, if you'll read in our report that I'll send you, this is another proposed project. This is the Magnum Energy, transportation and energy hub, where the proposed pipeline will take gas from Opal Hub and store it, use the salt dorms southwest of Salt Lake City to store. They have up to 40 BCF capacity. We'll track the Kern River pipeline down to Las Vegas, and then we'll go through western Arizona to supply Energia Costa Azul in northwestern Mexico, the industrial base of northwestern Mexico at Yuma. So this is one project that is being proposed, and we are part of our schedule in 2020 is to reach out and get the state governments of Nevada and Arizona to join our organization as well. Here's just to give you a better snapshot of various pipeline capacities, pipelines, routes, and capacity going into Energia Costa Azul. This is from Costa Azul slide deck. All these pipelines will need to be built out with, when you're looking at the energy at Costa Azul project, that at its peak will be, I think, 3 BCF a day by 2026. This is, we took a tour of the project. This is, they do have steel in the ground. This was originally built as an intake facility when we thought we'd be importing natural gas 15 years ago. This intake facility is going to be turned around in phase one. It's half a BCF a day. And then phase two will be 2.5 BCF a day. So they, the Sempra plant already has, this is a brownfield project, they already have steel in the ground and permits for this plant. They have already announced their contractor, their ECA contractor, just a couple of weeks ago in a press release, and will make FID sometime in Q1 2020 this year. I can say that just today, Sempra asked for an invoice to join our organization at the highest level. So I do believe they are serious about this project because they're they're spending money on our organization because they understand, you know, the advocacy benefits and our game plan in helping them get their project to commercial fruition. These are county commissioners. That is at the front, Commissioner Jeff Rector, your neighboring county commissioner from Rio Blanco County, Colorado. Commissioner Jim Willicks with the Wyoming hat and Wyoming University of Wyoming shirt, right in the middle of there. He's with Converse County. All made the trip, and that's just a fraction of the group. We had about 20 folks make it down for the trip. Here's just another map of the feed gas supply plan by Costa Azul. Clearly, you know, the Rockies gas is competing with Permian gas. You know, in some of the original presentations, they had outlined the cost advantages of Permian gas versus Rockies gas, and they signaled that they did like the producers in the Permian Basin, you know, the liquidity of the producers when you have Chevron and Exxon Mobil, that's very attractive to them. However, they did signal also that what they liked about the Rockies gas was that it was dedicated gas that was being produced because that was the goal. Permian gas is associated gas that is subject to the vagaries, the ups and downs of the international oil market. And I got to believe right now, with the collapse in prices and shutdown in production, projected shutdown in production in the Permian, that may signal Rockies gas flag it as in a very much more positive way as Costa Azul is moving forward in making its long-term feed gas supply plans. So next steps, we have established a 501c4. We are a officially designated advocacy organization as recognized by the IRS. We actually had our board of directors meeting last week. We are going to be establishing an advisory board of participating companies in terms of companies producing from Southwestern Wyoming. Dominion is a member of our organization at this point. We are going to continue to broaden participation at the county, state, and provincial level. We're going to continue establishing a robust media and communication plan. And longer term, about this time next year, we're going to organize a governor and tribal-led trade delegation to the East Asian nations to engage with our counterparts, look for investment, but help them, educate them on our resource base. I think at this point, if the federal government of Mexico joins us in our organization, a state, a delegation that consists of U.S. Western states with the resource base, and the government of Mexico with the export facility capacity, will be a very powerful message to the East Asian nations, Taiwan, South Korea, Japan, China, which are going to be the major LNG consumers in the years to come. We actually have started before the current quarantine environment. We had established a number of meetings with Asian LNG stakeholders in Houston. I would say that we've put together a list of over 40 LNG entities that have offices in Houston. And I met with, gave a presentation to a series of Japanese stakeholders, including JETRO, Mitsubishi, INPEX. The last company on here, JERA, is a company that's been established by the number one and number three utilities, Tokyo Electric Power, and I'm blanking on the third, the other utility. But JERA is the largest LNG consumer in the world. They're very much interested, have asked to be put on our list and are working with us, to start to, develop this envisioned trade mission. Probably will take place, start in Japan, again, sometime in, spring 2021, if all things, you know, if obviously the current environment is, resolved in the next few months. Here's our current membership. We have 20 members going down, number of county members, the Western Colorado counties, Duchesne County, Utah, Uinta County, Seven County Infrastructure Coalition of Utah, Dominion Energy Wexpro, Pembina Jordan Cove, a number of Western Colorado energy companies, and then in Converse County, Wyoming, I gave a presentation to them. In late 2019, and they joined in December 2019. I'm looking to expand our Wyoming presence and membership. We're working quite a bit with Governor Gordon's staff, Randy McKay and Randall Luthy, and of course Brian Hassler, Director of the Pipeline Authority, is our current board member. That's it. That is the conclusion of my presentation. I appreciate the time, and I guess I can open up for questions.
Andrew, thank you for your presentation, and it's my understanding you'll be making the same presentation to some of our adjoining counties. Is that today or in the upcoming future, Lincoln and so on?
No, they decided to postpone. I offered to do a webinar, and they want to meet face to face. So when this quarantine is lifted, I will come up there again. I'd be glad to meet with you all face-to-face. It's my preferred way of doing business. This is not optimal for me, but they just want to postpone and do a face-to-face meeting at the earliest available opportunity. But I did have a series of meetings scheduled for today where I'd be up there and giving all of you all face-to-face presentations.
Okay, thank you. Commissioners, do you have any questions for Andrew at this time?
I guess, just Commissioner Vickery, I guess I have one question. The delivery mechanism, is it pretty much in place? You're going to have to develop a pipeline system to carry this to the coast.
Yeah, the Pacific Connector is already proposed. The idea is that we would develop a pipeline from Western, tracking the Kern River pipeline from the Western states down to southern Mexico, northwestern Mexico. There is considerable industrial demand. Some of the folks that we've talked with that have projects kind of underway have been talking through intermediaries with the state electricity utility, who are looking at half a BCF a day, which would be enough to maybe put steel in the ground even before, you know, the 2026 opening of the Sempra plant. I think, there is, part of our organization's mission is to use the bully pulpit and use the kind of this prestige of the governor's offices of these western states to connect with these Eastern Asian nations to look at the prospect of investment in both resource development and infrastructure. Right now, the price of gas globally is pretty low, but I think if you're a major stakeholder dependent on LNG, say in South Korea, and are looking at a 20 or 30 year timeline, perhaps we, through discussions, we can find a sweet spot of long-term investment and prices that the Rockies producers can produce at, that will, catalyze investment both in production, export facilities, and long-term infrastructure.
Thank you.
Any other questions? If not, Andrew, thanks for your presentation. We'll take it under advisement.
I think
I'm
Joel
sure
wanted to say something.
Joel, do you have something?
Yes, can you hear me? I can hardly hear you now.
I can hear you.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Just one thought. After Mr. Browning has a chance to do his presentation with Lincoln County, whether Uinta or Sweetwater, we do have a coalition of governments in western Wyoming that might be an avenue to move forward with this effort in conjunction with our energy producers and the governor's office. Once we get to that point, I think it would be in our best interest to get together as kind of a coalition with the governor and with our Western Wyoming natural gas producers and kind of see how we can best support this effort.
That sounds good, Joel. So I don't think we have any more comments at this time, Andrew. We'll be following up and certainly looking into Commissioner Bousman's comment with our neighboring counties.
Absolutely. And again, it's my intent to come up and meet with you all personally. And once the quarantine is lifted and, we can all start to have resume normal functions. So I'll be in touch about that trip in the near future.
All right. Thank you, Andrew.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to present.
Okay.
Let me get back on here.
The online meeting has ended, and you will now be disconnected from the call. Goodbye.
Okay.
Smile, Joel.
There you are.
All right. So, okay, you're ready.
Are we back connected? Everybody's here. We're ready to continue forward with our agenda. Which brings us to Emily. I think you're next. If you'd like to pull a chair back, and we're going to be talking about our tax roll correction payments.
Tax roll correction. So you should have gotten a copy of the NOSBC that we were presented, I think, a week ago or so. Thank you. There are two for, well, there was four of them for Jonah Energy, but two of them that we're going to talk about today. One for $571,000 that we have to pay back from 2016, and another one for almost $300,000 from 2017. I have been in touch with, they're from school district number one for the most part. I think they're both district one, yeah. Talked to most of the entities involved in getting payments every month, and they were all in favor of going ahead and processing this over a 5-year period. None of them can really afford to take that hit all at once, starting with this May in 2020. So I have put together the letter proposing the 5-year repayment for Jonah Energy. So if you guys want to discuss that.
So basically what you're needing from us is for us to have a motion invoking our statutory right to pay these overpayments back over a 5-year period. I don't think there's a whole lot to discuss for that, but if you guys would like to.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman. This, excuse me, this is kind of what you were talking about earlier.
Absolutely.
Is the fact that there needs to be a time limit, and whatever that is, but for that to take place, that's a legislative type thing. That's
right.
Not a county right. commissioner thing.
Right.
And it has a major impact, as you stated earlier,
major
with regards particularly to the school districts,
mm-hmm.
because this goes back, 3 years?
2016, 4 years.
Yeah, four years. Okay.
So this would go through, so to speak, the Department of Education.
So the Department of Revenue, I'm not sure how the NOVC comes down mm-hmm. to the assessor's office. They do their portion, and then we get the information on how it needs to be paid back. I don't know. I know that the Department of Revenue has been working towards trying to either shorten the length of time that they can go back to do the true-up for these kinds of things, and if they could get it to where, you know, if they would report the information correctly to begin with, these NOVCs would at least be smaller. I know some of the oil and gas companies like to estimate conservatively so that they don't have to pay back interest and penalties if they owe more. So they pay more to begin with, and then they expect a payment back when the true up happens, which is what this is.
So when you take a school district that is a recapture district, what would be ideal would be this all happened at the same time. In other words, we're going to take your money for recapture, but you're also not going to have this happen to you, because if it did, the money could be taken out of your recapture payment, and
yeah.
and so everybody, you would, the business manager at a school would be okay with that. In other words, we know we're going to have to pay $500,000, but we had to pay $5 million to the state in recapture, so go ahead and take it out of this, and then the state would get the rest of it. But that's out of our hands.
It is out of our hands.
Okay.
So in the meantime, the two small ones, we went ahead and applied, we took care of those. But the two big ones, I want to do over a 5-year period.
So, Mr. Chairman, so help me here a little bit. So the big hits would be the school districts, because they probably already spent their money.
Well, it's already budgeted for them. So in order for us to pay back this $800,000, all the entities that we pay, because they each get a portion of what we collect in property taxes, they would all take a hit. So Rural Healthcare Board and Wheaton Pest and the library, and all of them take a hit when we have to pay back their estimates that are incorrect.
So I'm correct in thinking that the schools get 60% of the hit.
They take a huge chunk.
Because
most of the yeah. money that we collect does
60%.
Go to the schools and the foundation.
So it behooves everybody.
Absolutely.
If we invoke this statute and elect to pay it back over 5 years, which gives all the entities mentioned more time to adjust.
Yes.
Okay. So there you go. Anybody want to make that motion?
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
Would you like to read it again?
I don't have it in front of me, but it's a motion to invoke the statutory right to pay back the overvaluation over a 5-year period. And this pertains to the NOV 2020-163 and 2020-164.
Beginning in May.
2020.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
I'll second that. So moved twice, man.
Okay. Have you got that down, Carrie?
A motion in 2 seconds, yes.
Yeah. The motion to invoke that statute for payment over 5 years beginning in May of 2020. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. So that's.
And that letter should be in there. So.
Okay.
Yeah. That's it for today, huh, Emily? Thank you. Well, we still keep going on. We're at our monthly reports, and I need a motion to approve and pay the accounts payable.
So moved. Second.
Everybody jump in. We've got a motion and a second. Any discussion? If not, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Okay, hang on just a second. All right. Here's the letter for Emily. Accounts payable.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. Can we proceed with payroll? Need a motion to approve payroll in the amount of $1,024,365.62.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, got him.
Second.
If there's not any discussion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 John does not have any.
Okay. So then we need to approve two bond approvals, both for Tessa Manning. One is the treasurer for the Fayette Irrigation District, and one is the treasurer for the Highland Irrigation District. If I could have a motion to approve those. So moved.
Second.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Okay.
Do you want to start on this one? Pause a minute and let everybody catch up on signing these audits for their payroll payables. And then, we don't have a copy of that Doyle property lease, do we? Mm-hmm. I just have his letter.
Because I don't have that.
I
Okay, the next thing, the next item we have on our agenda is the lease for the Doyle property. If you remember, that's that 40 acres that we have haying on every year. We have a letter from Daryl Snyder that would once again like to lease this for haying only with no livestock. And once again, his agreement is to put the hay up for 60-40%. 40% belongs to the county, and his intent is to buy the 40% from the county for $60 a ton. So if I could have a motion to approve the Doyle property lease to Daryl Snyder.
So moved. Second.
Any discussion? If not, I'll signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Okay. We have the Pinedale Aquatic Center preliminary budget. That's just for
your review.
Our review.
Mm-hmm. And okay. It was emailed to everyone.
Yeah. Okay. So we have that for review and consideration. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the next item on our agenda is old business. And Commissioner Bousman, I'd like to start with you, and perhaps we could start with the approval of the letter of thanks to Senator Barrasso.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had drafted a letter, let me give you a little bit of background, trying to help Chad Cooper as our IC and COVID-19 effort. He was in dire need of expertise, in this case from the Forest Service, the local, I talked to Supervisor O'Connor, she was totally agreeable, but we had to go through a very extreme amount of paperwork process working through the Wyoming Office of Homeland Security and FEMA, Region 8 FEMA out of Denver. We were the first county to ask for help to be authorized in this manner, and it was based on our prior experience in wildland fire with the fire teams, how it's organized, how they put together their process, very efficient, very effective in terms of immediately securing resources needed to fight fire. We viewed this effort with the virus as a lot of similarities in terms of having very professional management team and to most effectively, the goal is to most effectively secure the resources for our medical community in doing so. So Chad instigated the effort through the Office of Homeland Security. They had the list of things they had to do to go to FEMA. FEMA had their list of things to do to get back to Homeland Security and ultimately get back to develop an agreement, which we talked about earlier today, that would determine how this was going to work. Chad became very frustrated with our lack of timely response, both from Homeland Security and FEMA. Senator Barrasso's staff person happened to be on a call, one of the WCCA calls, and he called me after that call offering to help. I asked him, please. He followed up with Region 8 of FEMA, personally got involved on behalf of the senator, and as a result, we now have two positions approved through the Forest Service to help Chad in his efforts to manage this situation. So this letter that you've all had by email is simply a letter of appreciation to the senator for his efforts in helping us get the resources we need to move forward. I truly feel we would not be there yet today if it hadn't have been for the involvement of the senator's staff. So with that, I move we approve the letter of appreciation to Senator Barrasso.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. The only comment I would add, Joel, is it was a very painstakingly slow process and particularly painful for Shad in terms of needing that personnel. And you're exactly right. Thanks to Mr. Ziegler's intervention, we were able to move it forward within a couple of days, and it's now in place, and it has set the groundwork for other counties to use. And it's my understanding that Park County will be making that similar request if they haven't already because of establishing that the route. So thanks to you, Joel. So we have a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All right, Joel, do you have other stuff?
I have two other things, Mr. Chairman, to bring you up to speed, the commission up to speed on the potential Good Neighbor Authority project, the 80-acre timber sale on the Upper Green. We have a conference call scheduled Friday with Forest Service, State Forestry, and myself on behalf of the county to start talking about a joint effort and who would do what to make this happen. I do have a short call scheduled tomorrow with Bill Crapser, the state forester, based on a House bill that established a specific good neighbor account for state forestry and authorizes counties to participate in that account. I anticipate that at some point, Sumner County will need to obligate some resources to this effort. And talking to Rich Stim, and I'll know more tomorrow after talking to Bill Crapser, our state forester, what this might look like for Sumner County. I'm anticipating we may be looking at like a one-third of a contract position. My gut tells me maybe what we need to do come budget time is to set up a line item account for this effort and put something in the ballpark of $50,000 in this account with the understanding that probably there won't be that much spent, but if we're successful in this first project and it moves to another one, then it could potentially obligate some more help. The plus side of this thing is if we can establish a way to do significantly more active management in Sublette County, reduce the cost of fire suppression. It wouldn't hurt even if we provided some jobs to help increase our economy because of the downturn in natural gas. But that's the long-term goal of doing all this. So I don't know I need it today, other than what I do need today is a commission support to move forward with this. The ultimate goal in working with the Forest Service and State Forestry would be to develop an agreement which would define how this is going to work, and at that time I would bring that draft agreement to be reviewed by Matt and the commission as we go forward from there. So that's where we're at this time. Any questions on that one?
No, Joel, I think you, from my standpoint, you got the go-ahead. This has been something that has been in the works for quite some time. It just appears like it's getting closer to fruition.
We're getting closer to fruition, and when we get a draft agreement, we would also probably call together a meeting of our local forest collaborative and run it by them, keep everybody informed on what we're doing, and make sure we have their support as we move forward. The other issue I wanted to bring up, and you're probably all aware that the decision to renew the grazing permits on the Upper Green is now being litigated, and we're having some calls. I've been included on numerous emails with the governor's office, Wyoming Stock Growers, the County Conservation District. Mike and I have discussed this, and I think we're decided that however we move forward as local government, we want the county and the district to be on the same page and move forward with as one entity there. What we're looking for right now, trying to get set up, is a conference call with the Attorney General's office and try and define the best role for the state of Wyoming, whether it be the governor's office or Department of Ag, on behalf of the governor's office, in supporting the Forest Service and Fish and Wildlife, and trying, our ultimate goal is to try and make sure that their decision to renew grazing is upheld, and that neither the Forest Service nor Fish and Wildlife Service decide to negotiate this without our support. And we want the agreement, we want the grazing decision to, understanding is being litigated. We don't want the federal agencies to, I guess the only term I can think of is cop out on this thing and leave our grazing permittees with an empty sack. And that's not a very good way of putting it, but that's what some of us are concerned about. Bailey Brennan with WCCA is working with Mike Hinn as we speak this morning and drafting a potential letter to our congressional delegation that will be asking them to use whatever means they have available to help us in this effort. At some point, we'll be deciding who is going to intervene. Will it be just the state of Wyoming? Will it be the states and local governments combined? Or would we be better off for the state to intervene and Wyoming stock growers, for example, the county, the conservation district, filing amicus briefs on behalf of the interveners and the Forest Service? We don't know the answer to that yet. What we don't want to do is everybody ask for separate intervener status and create a situation where it could render the intervener process less effective than it might otherwise be. So we've got a ways to go on that, and I guess our next step is to get feedback from the governor's office and the attorney general on what they think might be the best way to go. If we do ask for intervener status, or if we do ask for filing of an amicus brief, we have made significant donations to Mountain States Legal Foundation over the years. That may be an avenue. Our county attorney, Mike Crossan, might have some ideas in that regard. We're just not to that point yet of knowing what's the best way forward. But for purposes of this meeting, I just wanted to bring everybody up to speed and let everybody know what's going on. So with that, are there any questions on the UPA agreement?
Yeah, Joel, Doug, Vickery. So I didn't hear the Greener Valley Cattlemen's mentioned. Are they going to be included as a group in this?
Yeah, they're definitely involved. Albert Summers, in fact, Albert was the one that suggested a call with the Attorney General. They don't know yet if they're going to be polling their membership, the Upper Green Cattle Association, to join in this, or if Green River Valley Cattlemen's, they made some donations in the past to help cover legal expenses of doing some of this, but they're definitely, the Upper Green Association is definitely engaging the cattlemen's, and they're engaged themselves. None of us just quite know yet what is the most appropriate way to move forward on this, but that's what we're working on.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
Any other questions?
Okay, Commissioner Noble.
Oh, I'm sorry. Joel, did you want to talk about this letter?
Which letter?
The Annie Klein project that you emailed me about?
Oh, yeah, the Popo.
Oh, I had sent you an email this morning, about 10 minutes ago, Carrie. That's being taken care of, is my understanding. Whoever forwarded that to, I guess, somebody in Game and Fish, I'm not sure, but they're changing the name from Chairman Burnett to me as a member of the Poplar Board. So we don't need to do anything until you get updated paperwork.
Okay, thank you. Sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Commissioner Noble, do you want your microphone?
I have one quick question for Joel. How much money's left in the Popo situation? Do you know that?
I don't have the exact number off the top of my head, but the money coming into Popo is based on $7,500 per well spud, and with no drilling rigs working, there is no money coming into it. So there's going to be very little funding moving forward in Popo unless and until energy production picks up again. So,
do you have a guess on how much is in that account, Joel?
No, but I can look in my in my paperwork, and I can send you that information, Tom. It just been so long since we had our last meeting, that number did not pop into my head, and I don't have it in front of me.
That's okay. Thanks. Mr. Chairman, I don't. There was a meeting with Union and Andre and Mike Christie yesterday. They walked through to help Union kind of determine their build plan and build out for this area. It sounded like in the end, Andre is their point of contract to help point out the points of entry to the facilities. Other than that, there's nothing to come of it.
So
they were just trying to figure out how to do their build for this season, which they're starting here shortly. And I don't think there's an exact map yet of where they're going, but they are also starting to head for Big Piney here shortly too.
So they were looking at potential access to county facilities?
County facilities. And in previous conversations, we've talked about possibly utilizing their fiber network to enhance the county facilities. The difficult part of that is we're currently using CenturyLink, and 911 and all their bills are commingled, to the best of my knowledge, and we have a hard time separating those. Matt's worked on it a year or so
ago. It's impossible.
That's the challenge, is it tends to be a hurdle that no one can succumb. So I don't know how, at what point, we're ever going to utilize Union's network to get our facilities up to the modern age. So that's I guess one day at a time. I don't know, because we can't get rid of CenturyLink because there are 911 service. So if you guys have any suggestions, I'd like to kind of assign Matt to trying to figure out a solution to separating the bill out. I don't know if it's possible, like Carrie said.
So are we switching from CenturyLink to Union?
Not currently, no, but we would like to have that option. I mean, for example, the service that we're paying for, we don't even know that we're getting, because we don't know what we're paying for.
Right. I think Mike Christie has the information about what is internet and what is phone bill.
Okay, would that be something him and Matt could sit down and try and start?
So, I don't really understand what it is that we're wanting to do. Find out how much we're spending for internet?
Yeah. Wouldn't that make sense? And then we could separate that out of our bill, and if Union could come up with a better package and better speeds and services, that may be an approach.
Can you do that with CenturyLink? I mean, are they going to just roll over and say, oh, you can have the internet part?
No. Wouldn't it be a bid process?
I would think so. Yeah.
When that time comes, when everything's all ready to be hooked up, we get a bid from whoever that wants to take care of the county.
Well, I think
course, the problem is CenturyLink. We're just not getting the service we're paying for.
Yeah, it's not. It's not at all that simple in terms of equipment and lines and what's being serviced now. So I don't know.
Well, I don't
what it is you're asking.
We're not getting what we're paying for. We don't exactly
know what we're paying for.
If not, if you just want to divide it all out, because it's a very complicated bill. Stack.
So is there any way to make sense of that? I don't know. I'm asking you, Carrie. Is that, how can
to
we
find out how much
most people
pay
want
for
to know what they're getting billed and how, and yeah, we've struggled with this for 3 years.
We can
or
work
more
with Mike to find out how much we're paying for specific internet, but you know, some
to each building, is it that?
Well, then some
down
buildings. I'll work with you on that. We'll get a.
I appreciate you taking that on, because it seems like kind of an impossible task.
Okay.
Anything else?
Nothing comes to mind, Mr. Chairman.
Well, we'll give you another stab at it then.
Yeah, I always think of something halfway through, don't I?
Yeah. Commissioner Vickery.
I'm going to have to say, since the last meeting, I haven't left my house until today, so I have nothing to report.
Good for you. I haven't left my house much, but I've sure been on the phone a lot. Commissioner Ryhauser.
Mr. Chairman, the conference call yesterday was very enlightening with Commissioner Nesvik, with the head of the Forest Service. There were two of them. Both of them were the regional foresters and the district foresters. And the discussion was about the use or closing down of the forest, closing down of the boat ramps, all of this kind of stuff. There is discussion, but they've closed down on the forest, the campgrounds. They're closing down the campgrounds. And especially what saved them so far is the snow hasn't left, so people can't get into those campgrounds. And I couldn't figure out which forest she was talking about, but they've outlawed all open fires.
I think she was talking about the entire region,
right,
which goes from Nebraska, Colorado,
that,
Utah,
and I got confused on that,
Wyoming,
because
the entire region will have a fire ban.
Fire ban on it. And so,
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I can clarify that. That was the region two forester that was talking about that, which does not include us. Region two is Nebraska, and it ends at the Continental Divide. We get on this side, our side of the divide, we're in region four, which was Nora Rasher, was a regional forester for there, but I have no doubt in my mind that whatever, they're both considering that, and they maybe both regions have already taken action against campfires and open campfires. They may already have, but to clarify the region, we're in region four. Most of the state on the other side of the Continental Divide is in region two.
Thanks, Joel. I was impressed with Senator Barrasso and Representative Cheney being on the call and responding to the questions from the county commissioners from across the state, because everybody had, you know, some different questions on different subjects, and it was really nice for them to be on there talking to everybody. And so one of the things that Commissioner Nesvik said was he's been with spring turkey season, which doesn't affect us here, but if you're an out-of-state turkey hunter, they are giving your money back if you want it back. All you got to do is get a hold of Game and Fish, and they'll give you your money back because it is quite expensive. Fishing licenses, I don't believe they are. But nothing is being closed as of now except maybe the restrooms on the public accesses. One more thing that I need to bring up that we were going to do today, but we've decided to put it off, are the scholarships. And just remember that when you go through your list of your students and your number one student is a 5, and then all the way down to 1. And I think we're going to do that at the next meeting. Am I right, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, we were going to do it today. I've already got my 5 picked out for each end, and we should all be prepared to compare notes and do that by the next meeting. And to do so, we are going to need to figure out the technology for executive session. We're going to need to be able to go into executive session on that and maybe some other things, but we certainly need to on that issue.
And I did speak with the counselors and tell them the problems we've been having, and they were ecstatic with a couple of the little changes. Mm-hmm. So that was and that will all be redone when it comes for next year in terms of putting out the criteria.
In the past, Mr. Chairman, I believe we went into executive session to discuss who we were going to award them to.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I mean. We need to be prepared next meeting. It's been a learning process doing the Zoom thing. So we need to be prepared at next meeting to be able to separate out or be able to go into executive session.
That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
So I have a question of Commissioner Rawhauser concerning the discussion with Brian Eswick, director, by the way, not commissioner. Mm-hmm. And so the closure order on Mac, what did you hear them discuss, closure order on the facilities at the launching?
The things that were locked, in other words, a restroom or things like that, they were going to lock those up.
Do you know when that's going to start?
No, they didn't get that.
Because I've already seen the footprints using the ones out by our place. Mm-hmm. They're walking in from the county road out to there. And so they need to get that information out.
Well, they haven't, my understanding of the conversation, they're not closing any ramps. They're not closing access for public recreational facilities. They're closing overnight camping. They're closing established campgrounds. You can still go in the forest and camp wherever you want to. They're closing, as far as the game and fish, they're closing down the public facilities restrooms, but they're not closing the launches down.
No, that was my question to Mac. When mm-hmm. are they going to close or make a note of closing the facilities, the restroom facilities? Because they are using them, at least in our part of the mm-hmm. area right now as we speak, and it's only going to get worse. If they don't get, the Game and Fish, doesn't take initiative to do something.
They didn't have a date set that I knew of, but I would think it would be quickly.
Yep. Okay. Well, I'll talk to Mr. Lund. I have not yet.
Commissioner Noble.
I guess I have a question, and it's more of a your thoughts. The golf course is supposed to open sometime soon. Do we want to weigh in on that?
What's your opinion? You asked the question.
My opinion is, I guess at this point, I don't believe that's appropriate. To open the golf course.
Who owns it?
The county.
Yeah.
It's closed.
It's a county facility. If you're asking my opinion.
I guess I'm just saying, do we need to give them some guidance on that or reach out to them, or what are your thoughts?
I would think so. We have every other county-owned facility.
It's closed.
We have closed at this time, for this time, indefinitely. And I can understand people wanting to get out and recreate, but I still have a concern that if you're going to still be socially isolating, it's difficult to do riding in a golf cart together and a number of other things. But
I don't know what they've discussed, safety precautions or anything.
Yeah, I understand, but where do you draw the line between playing golf and having an open contest?
No, I agree.
Yeah.
And I just...
So what's your opinion? My opinion is a county facility.
Absolutely, because had a huge discussion about closing the riding arena at the fairgrounds, and it didn't go well. But I understand.
Did they close it?
Well, sure, absolutely.
Well, I just wondered if we should ask Matt or someone to reach out to the chairman of the golf committee and let them know that that's our take on it.
Doug, your thoughts?
Well, I think I see Mr. Duke, who is the operator out there, had made an offer for curbside service somewhere, so that indicated to me that he knows he's closed down inside. I don't know. I guess it needs to be for certain.
You're talking food, though.
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah.
Joe, your thoughts on this?
Just a thought, Mr. Chairman. At this time, I'm sure the clubhouse itself is closed because of the restaurant part of it. I think in terms of if it's expanded to the golf course, I guess my thought is if we think there's going to be enough people there together at the same time that it's causing a risk situation, that we take this up with our county health officer, and that's probably where that decision should come from.
Well, I agree, but I also know that there's some areas that we didn't consult the county health officer on and made that decision because it was a county entity. So although I would welcome his opinion on this, I still have trouble with consistency if we've closed all the other county facilities and we have an exception for the golf course, and then what happens if they want to have a tournament. I think it's simpler.
A tournament would definitely put people at risk, I think, just for as little as I know about it.
Well, I'm just saying as the county stance, we've been, I know, and I think you were on this phone call. We had a phone call with Game and Fish, Forest Service, BLM, and the county health officer with regards to our concern about shed hunting and so on. And I think he made a statement at that time that he was actually in favor of a stay-in-place order, which is more than what I think we need. I agree with the governor on this, but I'm thinking if that is his position, then he would probably certainly feel the same thing about the golf course. But I will give him a call and ask him, tell him what we're thinking. But I do need to, we need to have this discussion, because if he agrees with that, then we're not going to get, nor do we need, an order from the county health officer to close the golf course. It's just a decision that commissioners make with regards to county property.
I think you're right, Mr. Chairman, and I also think, based on that conference call, that the county health officer appeared to be in favor of a stay-in-place order, which would be even more restrictive than what we're talking about at this time. So,
exactly.
I think that's where we're at.
So I will contact Dr. Fitzsimmons, telling him, discussing with him that is our opinion, and see if he concurs with it.
Okay.
Okay. I have a few things to report. Most of them just have to do involvement with the WCCA and those phone calls that have been on a three-time weekly basis at 4 o'clock. They have been not only informative, but they have been an excellent avenue and opportunity for the various commissioners to express their concerns, state their questions, and see what their fellow commissioners from different areas across the state are experiencing with this. And as Commissioner Rawhauser said, it's an excellent opportunity because those calls daily are attended by our federal representatives, Senator Barrasso, Senator Enzi, and Congresswoman Cheney. And for the most part, Congresswoman Cheney has herself personally been on those calls and listened to the entire conversation at that time. There's also been daily presence on that from Homeland Security and the Wyoming Department of Health. And then there's featured people at other times. For instance, yesterday, when we had representatives from the regional office of Forest Service, and we had BLM as well as Director Nesbitt from Game and Fish. So that's been a helpful ongoing thing. That's something that's going to continue. Unfortunately, we're all experiencing a lot of the same concerns with limited PPE, limited testing, concerns for stress on our hospital clinic systems or medical staff. But there seems to be the general consensus that we're all in this together and we're all doing the best that we can do. And there is a unanimous consensus that we're all going to survive this by doing our part. And I think Sibley County has done outstanding in that regard, not only in taking the lead on some of these things, but setting the example. You know, even with our limited testing for over 200 cases in Wyoming, to still not have a death I don't know if it's necessarily an attribute, but it's certainly a blessing to be in that category. I did have the opportunity to be on one conference call that was with the White House directly. It was relegated to local and state officials, and it did feature comments by Dr. Fauci and Director Kudlow with economics. So we are staying abreast as much as we can. I don't think we have any unique problems. I think we have some very common problems that we're working on together, and it's good to know that we're coming together for this, and I think we all are hopeful that not only will this will pass, but we're going to be stronger in the process. So that's what I have for report. Anybody got anything else? Tom, did you think of something else? Commissioner Bowser? Yes.
One afterthought. I mentioned that Bailey Brennan was working with Mike Ken as we speak to potentially draft a letter to our delegation. And if they do that and get that draft done, I would like to be able to send that by email out to the commissioners for approval, because I don't think it's something we want to put off till our next meeting, that kind of request. So just to let everybody know, I don't know what we have to do at this meeting to authorize that to happen, to send a letter without a motion. I don't know how to make that happen, but we need, maybe if we talk about it in open session as we're doing right now, and simply a letter asking some help from our congressional delegation, that I would like to be able to have a process to get that done without waiting for the next commission meeting.
Okay, so you're going to be sending a letter to the congressional delegation with regards to this forest project?
Upper Green Region.
Oh, the Upper Green.
Green Region.
Okay.
The Upper Green Region.
Asking for help there, yes.
Yes.
I think we can weigh in now and see if anybody has any concerns with giving Commissioner Bousman the authority to go ahead and submit a letter to our congressional delegates after we've seen a copy of it and sign off and say, yeah, voice our opinion. If there's not any objections, you can go ahead and send the letter out. We don't need to wait till the next meeting. Commissioners?
That would be my
preference. I don't have a problem.
Anybody got a problem with that?
I think you covered it. If we can all read through it quick.
We'll just draft one up, send it out on an email to us. We'll indicate by response that we are okay or approve or whatever, and then you've got the authority to go ahead and send it out, Joel.
Okay, that's what I need to happen. Thank you. And when they get it done, assuming they get it done, I'll get it out to everybody.
Okay, and everybody respond. Okay, if there's not any more old business, I think we'll adjourn this meeting. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thanks, Joe.